everyone, and welcome to another Spotlight here on the Epic Film Guys podcast. I am Nick, and this week we're going to be reviewing, or talking about, or discussing, whatever the fuck I end up doing, a film that I have seen for the very first time, literally just before this recording began. We're going to be taking a look at John Wick. And I couldn't do this alone, and this, of course, was voted on over in the Hopester's Dumpster as one of the Spotlight films that we were going to be tackling. And I am thrilled, overjoyed, I should say, to be joined by a very, very, very good friend of the show, my brother, down in Perth, Australia. Paul from the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews is here. Paul, how the hell are you tonight?
How dare you?
I really don't think that that's called for. I'm sorry.
I am exceptionally well, and it's nice to hear myself talking to myself at the other end of the line. Thank you again for including me on the soundboard. I expect to hear that several times today, especially if, for whatever reason, you don't like this movie, because I think John Wick is a fucking modern-day action masterpiece. So I'm delighted to be here.
God damn. Well, we will get into all of that, Paul, but first things first, right up at the top of the show, we do it every single week on the main Epic Film Guys podcast, so you already know what's coming. What are you drinking?
I'm back! Puke and rally! Yeah. Woo!
Give me a beer! And being that you are joining us from down in Perth, what are you drinking?
Well, I have a very first-time beer to me. I picked it up on a whim on Friday after a particularly long and shit day at work. And I have to say, as a whim buy goes, it's good. It's Hawker's IPA. It's 6.5% by alcohol volume, which is exceptionally hardcore for Australian beer. I can't even tell you if it is Australian beer, though, because I'm trying to find, and I cannot find the brewery where it's made. So it's a very traditional IPA. It's very quite light for a 6.5% beer in terms of taste. And yeah, I think it tastes pretty damn good. I will definitely be buying more.
All right. And well, this evening, heaven help me, please.
Don't tell me you got a New England IPA style beer.
I do have a New England IPA. It's not intentional. It just, I happen to buy it because I do enjoy it. I'm not, you know, a slave to the style because it's the only thing I've ever tasted and I'll never ever taste any other kind of beer again. This is from Lord Hobo Brewing Company. Very apropos if you're a fan of the Epic Film Guys. This is Boom Sauce. And yes, this is a New England style IPA. Very, very kind of pine forward, very earthy. It's got a good solid mouthfeel to it. I like it. It's very, very good.
I have to say that I don't even know what a New England IPA style beer is. What does a New England IPA beer taste like?
Generally, they're not as hop forward. Like, you know, you get kind of a standard IPA where you just get a good solid bite of hops and it's got a good like bitterness to it. New England IPAs are, first of all, they're unfiltered. So they have a very solid color. You cannot see through the glass at all. So they look very, very hazy. And then they often just kind of taste a lot more, just unless you say juicy. A lot of them have a lot more flavors going on in there that really kind of mute the hops. You can still taste the hops, of course, but this one, yeah, you can still actually really get a good hoppy bite out of this. It's like a good earthy hoppiness to it. I like it. I'm a fan.
Thank you. Thank you for that education.
You're, well, fine.
Well, Justin's going to be like, being sarcastic.
That son of a bitch. No, this is why this is better, and this is why there's...
He sucked an a New England IPA last night.
I would hit the... See, Winners actually sent me the soundbite of you making fun of Justin, saying Justin's very famous soundboard catchphrase, famous for, like, you know, four people. I have it somewhere. I just haven't edited the soundboard yet, because, of course, I had my soundboard woes where I didn't have it. I had to replace the XLR cable for my microphone. Now I've got it back. It's wonderful to have it back.
Baby.
Fix yourself.
Dan, quiet.
That's what we're talking about. Come on, Dan. Back in your box.
God damn it, Dan. But we're not here to talk about New England style IPAs tonight. We're not here to talk about anything but John Wick. Of course, starring Keanu Reeves and a litany of other people that I was really surprised to see. I was like, holy shit, Willem Dafoe's in this when I was watching it. And Paul, can you give us the specs?
I certainly can. John Wick was directed by Chad Stahelski, and uncredited David Leitch. And obviously, other than Keanu Reeves, like you said, it stars Michael Nyqvist, Alfie Allen, Adrian Palicki, Ian McShane, John Leguizamo, and Bridget Moynihan, a very smaller, as well as Lance Reddick, who TV viewers will be very familiar with from his various iterations there. Written by Derek Kolstad, never heard of him off the top of my head. Budget $30 million US dollars, and it made. Nick, do you have any estimation on what this film made upon its release?
I'm going to go over 100.
Almost. $89 million, nice. Which obviously on a budget of that amount is enough to warrant a sequel, which we got earlier this year.
Yeah, and I can't remember what you said about the sequel, so that's probably good for when I inevitably do watch it. I don't really remember what a lot of people said about it. The only thing I remember about the sequel is how agonizingly long it took for you to get it down there in Australia.
Oh, and don't get me started again. I'll give you the summary statement. It came out so late here in Australia that I saw it at an advanced screening here and then bought the 4K disc 2 weeks later.
Advanced
fucking ridiculous
screening. yeah. So, you're the guest. All right. So even though this is my first time watching the film, and I know you're chomping at the bit, in anticipation, tell us, Paul, if you will, how you feel just overall. We got a lot of stuff to kind of get into with this film, but tell just first of all, how do you feel about this movie?
Well, I would have had a very different viewing experience to you, Nick, because I came to this, I would say, almost completely by accident. That, yeah, Keanu Reeves in an action film, and yeah, it did pretty well, but really, it's Keanu Reeves, it's another action film, how good can it be? And I stuck it on and watched it one night. Yeah, so this film was out in late 2014, so I watched it in 2015, and I was quite simply blown the fuck away. It had everything that I look for in an action film. It's slickly shot. It's got a great color palette. The action is awesome. That's the most important thing, obviously, in an action movie. Keanu Reeves is perfect as the very stoic, so to speak, assassin, which everybody is scared shitless of in this world. And that was the best thing about the film. It hinted at this bigger world in which all these events take place. The police are barely a presence. This underworld of assassins and organizations and guilds, if you will, of assassins is just so fucking cool. In fact, that's the word for this movie, or that's the phrase for this movie. So fucking cool.
All right. Well, I've got to do it, Paul. I've got to play a special soundbite for you.
Oh, no.
Where is it? Where is it?
I'm so happy I have you as my best friend.
I fucking love this movie, dude. Are you fucking kidding me?
Oh, thank God.
My God. I wanted to play the Knicks Rants theme for you and throw you for a minute, but then I was like,
I'd have been gutted.
I would have heard the Skype disconnect sound. I would have been like, Paul. I mean, from the moment this film opens, and I want to start off by talking about kind of before any of the action takes place in the film, because I really feel like it's the most important part of the film, in that all you get to hear about, I mean, first, of course, the car gets stolen, then the dog gets killed, which I know I've heard a lot of people talk about. So I was expecting it. I like knew the dog was going to get killed. And then the dog was so cute. I was like, come on, you can't kill that dog. Like, I thought it was like, you know,
must be talking about another dog.
Yeah. Like some big mean fucking dog or some shit. And then like, I was like, oh, and then I saw the dog. I was like, oh, they're not going to kill that dog, are they? But to the film's detriment almost, I think, cause I would have just loved to see, I don't even know, like more of the opening part of the film where you don't even know who he is or you don't even know what he is. And then like all of a sudden the film just turns on a head. And I think because the opening was so short, like, and because I kind of know about the film, like I expected that. That said, this film is about a brisk 100 minutes. So it doesn't waste any time pushing you right into the action. Boom, no. Boom, 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 boom. And then it spends, what would you say? Maybe a good like 5 to 10 minutes just talking about the boogeyman himself, talking about John Wick as in like you, like the guy's son, like the crime boss's son. It's like you fucked up royally. And then, like, the whole time you don't get to see him doing any of this action. So it's, you haven't, there's no like bombastic action sequence to set up this whole thing. Like, I kind of had this moment where I was like, wait a minute, what? Like, what? Really? Like, no, come on. They're full of shit. Like, I think that maybe a lot of people had that when they were watching the film for the first time. They were like, what? No, come on. No, like, that's not what it is. And then, like, they're all talking about it, and they're talking him up, and they're talking him up, and they're talking him up. And then I was almost worried, Paul, that they were going to kind of set up a premise that this film couldn't deliver on. Like, they were going to talk him up so much, and then it wasn't going to be as badass as I thought it was going to be. Holy shit, was it?
I think it's kind of genius. Like, as you said, the first act in this film is incredibly short. So his wife has just died. She's battled whatever illness. I assume it's some form of cancer.
Yeah.
And she has arranged to deliver him a puppy to help him cope.
Yep.
And he'd given up the life. He was out. He had, as we find out in the second film, which I won't spoil beyond this one statement, he has arranged for himself to get out of the life, which is almost unheard of, to be with her. She has humanized him to a point that nobody would have believed. Then he runs into Alfie Allen's mob boss's son character, who is as entitled and, well, cunty as you would expect such a person to be. And he covets John's car, so they basically follow him home, not realizing who he is, of course, break into his house, knock the shit out of him, kill the dog, and steal his car. And then that's the end of Act 1, basically. And then we get, like you say, 5 or 10 minutes of people reacting to the news that you did what to John Wick? And Michael Nyquist's Viggo, his name is, he's the head of the Russian crime syndicate in NYC. His reaction on the phone when he says he stole John Wick's car and killed his dog, and his jaw drops and he almost drops the phone, and it's perfect. And he just, Baba Yaga, you know, the boogeyman is now coming. And you can see in that moment, he knows exactly what is going to happen, and he's not wrong.
Yeah, and I had that moment where, you know, the son takes the car to a chop shop that's run by John Leguizamo's character. You never see him in movies anymore. It was really, really great to see him, even if it was only like a bit part. It was kind of nice to see John Leguizamo because, what does he do anymore?
No, he's always, he's always in bit parts. It's been a long time since I've seen him in a major role. So obviously he's made enough money and just comes out every so often so people don't forget his face.
Yeah, true. But it was nice because then as soon as, you know, he's like, where the fuck did you get that car? And then it cuts away from that scene. And then I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. And then that's when you first meet Viggo, and then you go back and forth. And then all of a sudden, like literally I think the scene is maybe a minute or two later. John Wick rolls into the same exact chop shop and is like, was it here? And then Leguizamo pours him a glass of liquor and then just says it was. And then that's when you kick off this whole, they kind of build up the myth of John Wick. And I think in terms of a setup, like I said, I almost just wanted more of it just because I wanted to see him just living a normal life until all of a sudden he's dragged back in, and all of a sudden the whole film turns on its head. I get why it wasn't in here, and it's not like I would deduct points.
It's that run time, yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to keep it as tight as possible.
Yeah. I wouldn't like take away score points or anything like that, because the opening of the film, it gets right to business, and then it builds up this character, and then you see people approaching the house, and then it's like, all right, film, you've written a check that your ass better be able to cash. And like, one thing I want to go back to as we talk about the different stages of this film is how the action is filmed in this, because you see a lot of action films nowadays where they're way too edit heavy. There's way too many cuts.
Not even
close in this film. There are so many shots that linger on action. So you can tell that they had to have performers that could actually perform this stunt choreography in terms of an action film, like for several seconds at a time. Or there's one shot of the hallway in the opening fight. Oh my God, what a great scene. My God, I can't begin to express to you. Like, I was pretty sure I was sitting here like with my jaw, like all over my keyboard, like just trying to roll it back up. Like, holy shit. Holy shit. Holy shit. Holy shit. One thing that I love about John Wick, the character, is whenever he has, you know, beaten somebody, like say he caps him in the leg, or say he clocks him, or, you know, there's a lot of body throws in this, like, you know, hip tosses and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
the thing I love the most about his character is that he always finishes him off. He always makes sure he pulls his gun around him, pops him right in the fucking head.
I 100% agree. I love that so much. And you are so right about these action scenes. They are directed so perfectly. There's it's almost like a gun Carter, to borrow a term from that film Equilibrium. It's gun fu. Like, he is so fluid in his motions with the gun that they're almost like an extension of himself. And the directors deliberately set out to make this film as martial arts impressionistic as possible, but with guns. Now, David Leitch, he went on to direct Atomic Blonde, which I don't know if you saw that this year.
I did not, unfortunately.
Okay, well, there is one in absolutely stellar, incredible action sequence which built upon all the promise shown in this John Wick film and then takes it up to 11. It is awesome, and it's the same thing. It's that we are not going to cut. Yes, there are cuts hidden in the shots in Atomic Blonde, and I'm not so sure about in this film, to be honest, but it's just graceful beyond anything which edit. Oh, Steven Seagal, fat prick that he is, has to kick from four different angles at once. Fuck you,
Seagal. Watch.
And every film that cuts around an actor's inability to perform, because Keanu Reeves went through extensive training, gun training, physical training. There's features all through both films, John Wick 1 and John Wick 2, about how dedicated he was to this. And combine that with the fact that apparently he is the nicest fucking guy ever in real life. I love me some Keanu Reeves. Gerald from Two Peas on a Podcast can suck a dick because he is awesome. Sorry, Gerald. Sorry.
Why would you say that, Paul? Come on. Granted, of course, you guys just did, you know, the most miscast characters on the show, and, you know, I'm pretty sure it was Wayne that put him on the list really high up. I think you had him on the list lower.
I did, for Dracula.
And I totally get that criticism, because as much as anybody might love Keanu, you never want him if it's a role that has a lot of range to it. I think he's perfect. He doesn't have a lot to say in this film. He just has to do, and he just has to perform, and he just has to be a presence on screen. And he excels at that when you let him do that. And in this film, like I said, when it talks him up for however long it is, I had this moment in my head where I was like, all right, film, you've written a check that your ass had better be able to cash, because it could very easily have been you talk him up, and then you get this very, very cut-heavy action sequence where you don't get to see the character doing all this stuff, and then it would have taken the piss right out of it. You know, it would have immediately underwhelmed me and then kind of set the stage for the whole rest of the film. Like, all right, keep the expectations low, keep the expectations in check. This is as good as it's going to get, you know? And I was so, so, so happy about that shot. And then my favorite thing in this film is something that you already touched on. It's the world hidden beneath here. And of course, the Continental plays a huge part of that, but also the cleanup crew, when he calls them and he orders, you know, a dinner reservation for 12. And then the cleanup crew shows up. He just hands them a stack of gold coins and they just proceed to get to work. There's this whole other universe completely beneath this.
That's it. That's
that it. They barely even scratch the surface of. Of course, Ian McShane's a part of it. And there's Matthew Abaddon from Lost. That's all I could keep thinking every time he spoke and every time I saw him. I was like, God damn it, it's Abaddon.
I love Ian McShane. He just brings this gravitas to any role he's in.
He's the
perfect older actor who is just, you believe everything he says because he's got that wonderfully pitched voice, which is just awesome. And so when he is the head of the Continental, as you said, and he's telling John what he can and cannot do, and then he enforces his rule of law later when there is a botched assassination attempt on John on the Continental grounds, there's just no question what has to happen, and boom, that character is offed.
Yeah. And I love that. And you move on from the first action sequence, and then, of course, like I said, you have the whole thing. And then shit literally hits the fan, pretty much. You literally see he goes to that one club where Kevin Nash, of all people, is the fucking bouncer for whatever reason. And then Keanu Reeves pulls the gun on him and then is like, you could take the night off. And he's like, thank you. I was like, was that Kevin Nash? Like, that was Kevin Nash, I'm pretty sure. And then I had to wait in the credits.
Kevin Nash?
I was big into wrestling back in like the 90s and shit. And he was like Big Daddy Diesel in the WWE. And then he was, well, just by his own name, Kevin Nash, when he was in WCW. But like, the dude's 7 feet tall. Like, he's just a monster of a guy.
I thought you were talking about some kind of country music star or something.
But like, no, he's like a monstrous presence. Like I said, he's like 7 feet tall. And like, I love him. But I was like, is that... That was Kevin Nash. And then, like, literally, as quick as he's in the movie, he's gone. I was like, wait a minute. Where? What? And, like, you get to the whole sequence at the bathhouse, I guess it is. It's like,
well,
a club.
I guess it serves a purpose then, right? Sorry to interrupt you there. Step all
no,
over
go
you.
Ahead.
It serves the purpose of, here is Keanu Reeves, who is, you know, he's a good-looking bloke for his age, and he has a physical presence, but he's not 7 feet fucking tall.
Oh, no.
And this bouncer should have just, you know, basically stepped up, crushed his head in his tiny head in his vice-like hands. But instead, he follows John's direction. Take the night off. Okay, sir. Thanks very much. Off he goes.
Yeah. It's, like I said, it was interesting. It was really interesting that they would bring a physical presence like Kevin Nash into this film and then just see ya. Have a good time. And it was like, okay. But then, like, there's one of the greatest shots of this movie is when they're down in the bathhouse portion of it, mm-hmm. and that big mm-hmm. hulking Russian dude that's like only wearing a Speedo, he's got that big giant beard and everything, comes out of the bath and attacks him. And I think he shoots him in the chest like 4 times and then pops him right in the head. Oh, man. There's so many great. I mean, I know you're the horror guy, so I know you love seeing your gore and you love seeing your kills anyway, but there's so many great kills in this movie where you get to see, like, literally they hold no bones about it. Boom, gun right to the head. Bam! And I love it. Like I said, I love that he finishes guys off. He doesn't leave the opportunity for somebody to get up and come back later. Like, that's if right. they're down on the ground, he breaks their leg or, you know, beats the hell out of them, whatever the hell it is. When they're down on the ground, you see that gun swing back and just, bam, pop off an extra round just to finish that guy off that you just kicked the crap out of.
He is a remorseless killing machine. And that nightclub sequence is, I would suggest, the film's best sequence. It's a perfect blend of editing, music. I love the music in that
sequence.
The music
is great.
And just John Wick, yeah, he does take punches. He does get hit. He's not perfect. He's not superhuman. Or he is superhuman, but he's not perfect. And he gets clocked a few times and he gets almost killed a few times, but he always bounces back and keeps going. And he, like I said, he's a remorseless killing machine, and you believe every second of it.
Yeah. Where the film starts to lose me just a little bit is, it's like you said, he does take damage. He does get beaten up. There's the great scene where he's getting stitched up by the doctor after he had that broken champagne bottle or whatever jabbed into his abdomen.
And that's right. Yep.
He's drinking bourbon and he's got the little ice pack on his shoulder or whatever. And he looks like he's really been through hell, which is great. But then there's the doctor who, you know, tells him, you know, he's like, you know, you still got business to attend to or whatever. So take two of these and you'll be fine. And then there's even the one, you know, sequence where the assassin tries to attack him in the hotel room where she purposely like attacks the wound. And it never really
yes.
seems to phase him at that point. Like, it seems to be just kind of a forgotten plot point at some point, like where they have the scene with the doctor where he's patching him up. But then, like, see, I was figuring they would come back to it later. Like he would weaken because he tore his stitches and he was bleeding or whatever. It never happens. They're just like, fuck it.
I mean, I get where you're coming from, and that's probably a relatively fair criticism, unless you buy into the fact that this was the Russian mob's best assassin, who is now angry beyond the point of reasoning.
Yeah.
That the film's basically saying that no physical ailment short of death is going to stop him in doing what he wants to do. And that doctor scene reinforces an earlier scene in the film where the cop comes to his door and basically says, "You're working again, John?"
The cop scene is like, great.
Yeah. John's like, I don't even know if he answers him, to be honest, but it's just obviously the answer is, yes, I am, because I have to be. And the cop's like, cool, like, we're just going to step aside.
You see the lights outside. And that's another one of those things that it subverts a lot of tropes, at least early on in this film, where the cop shows up at the door and you see the lights outside and you're like, oh, shit, how is he going to get out of this? And then, like, he just says, he addresses him by his first name. He's like, hey, Jimmy. And then, are you back to working again? And then I forget what John Wick says, but then, you know, Jimmy kind of just tilts his head to the side to see in the door, and he sees like 3 dead bodies behind him in the house.
And walks away.
And he just walks away. He's just like, you know, be seeing you, John. Take care, Jimmy. Like, shuts the door. Like, I'm just like, okay. Like, so clearly, like, all of that, really what that does is it helps to construct the myth of John Wick.
Yes.
It helps to construct, like, that this character really is a force to be reckoned with. And then the whole film after that opening sequence, because for the first act and then for that first opening action sequence, all they're doing is building up this character, and then they spend the whole rest of the film paying it off. It's perfectly, perfectly, perfectly constructed for the most part. It's I can't say enough good things about it. I fucking loved this movie. I want to watch it again right now.
I am. Okay, and it's such a rewatchable film. But if I can say, I'm, again, so relieved, so pleased that you love this film. You are unpredictable at best, Nicholas. So
a little bit.
To have both epic film guys, because I'm sure I've had discussions.
Oh, Justin loves it.
Loves this movie as well. So that's a couple of big ticks from
that guy.
if you could somehow amend that to be, I sucked a wick last night. Hey,
I just got to get him to say wick, and then I could just cut it in there.
Yep.
Actually, I'm sure
everyone
he has
would be on board
somewhere. I think he talked about the sequel at some point when he watched it. I'm pretty sure he at least mentioned it, so I'll have to try to fit that in there. Oh my god! But you know what I want to get into though,
please.
Is I want to move a little bit forward into the film. I love the continental aspects of it. I love the action sequences in the film. None of the action sequences in this film are a letdown, as far as I'm concerned. I love how, I'll say casually, I love how casually the film just dispatches the sun. Like, that's his driving path. He wants to catch the sun because he stole his car and he killed his dog. And the whole time, he's such a smarmy little dick. You just want to kick him in the teeth. He's so entitled. You said it exactly perfect. He's just an entitled little dick. And you hate him the whole time. And then all you want is for John Wick to catch him and kill him. And I love how just kind of coldly and casually the film just boop, pops him. But then what the film decides to do is it kind of starts to play into a couple of action movie tropes where it has, you know, where he eventually gets caught. I think it's after the church scene. Yeah. It's after the church scene where he burns the stuff, whatever.
Yeah.
And then he gets caught by Viggo, and, you know, they're sitting there and they're taunting him and they're whatever, blah 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 this and blah 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 that. And like, to me, like, it was this whole kind of like, guys, this dude just went through and wiped out like 90% of, I don't even know what percentage of their men, but like, he just went through, he had to put a sizable dent in like your footprint in the city or like your organization as a whole. Just fucking kill him. Just kill him. You don't have to tie him up and taunt him and whatever, because you know he's a world-class assassin. You know, if you just let him be, he's going to break out and he's going to figure out a way to fucking kill you. And of course, that's what ends up happening. But I really dislike it when they play that trope, because like, it's just like, just kill him. Just fucking kill him. And I mean, it's the same reason why people will wander down a dark hallway in a horror movie, even though you know that they shouldn't and they know that they shouldn't and whatever. But it's just stuff like that just drives me nuts.
Yeah, I get you, and I understand. I guess it's just a scene which heightens or tries to deliver some tension that maybe John Wick isn't going to get away with this. And then we see that Willem Dafoe's seemingly competitor is actually, well, maybe it's not here, maybe it's earlier in the continental scene, but he's actually on side and he's willing to help John because they have such a respect for each other, I guess, that they are friends, effectively.
Yeah, and that was fine, I guess. I don't know. Like, it just decided it was going to play into, like, that action movie trope of we caught the badass. Like, it's like a Bond movie. Like, you know, we caught James Bond, but now we're going to put him in this ridiculously easy to escape situation, you know? And like,
yeah,
you know, I get why John Wick wouldn't kill Viggo. Like, he would want the contract called off and he would want, you know, whatever. Like, all he wanted was vengeance that he eventually ended up getting for killing his son. And Well, you know, I guess it was he kills the son after that, because I was trying to like place the timeline of the film in my head. I was like, wait, did he kill him before then or after then? I don't fucking know.
I've seen it three times, this movie, so I'm just going to go with your I watched it 2 hours ago memory. So, but look, it all worked for me. Yes, that it has that. Let's be honest, the script is, as an overall, it's pretty straightforward. There's nothing amazing about it. It's more the elegance with which it's delivered which really sells this film, and the, as you said, the awesome action scenes and the underworld that it hints at, which does get expanded on in John Wick Chapter 2.
Ah, I'm so excited. I'm so excited to watch the sequel. Although I know some people had mixed opinions, we'll say, about the sequel. So I'm going to try to temper my expectations going into it.
Probably wise.
Yeah. But it'll be a film that I'm definitely just... I just want to see more of that, like, insanely punched up action. Like, that's what I love about a movie like this, though, is that you can make... They delivered on what they promised. They delivered on the promise of Keanu Reeves just kicking literally every ass and taking literally no prisoners. And I love that about it. And I think, ultimately, that's why the film has to endure. Like, this is probably one of the best action films I've seen in... years.
Absolutely.
Like years and years. Like, it's like you don't get action films like this. Like, I immediately think of like garbage shit can films that have action in them, like the fucking Resident Evil movies where there are more cuts per second than I could possibly count. Like, there's like 12 of them per second. Like, you can't, like, I
what
love
are you saying
that.
Nick, what are you saying? Mila Jovovich can't do a kick? Surely not.
It's just, that's what's frustrating about it. And not even to pick on those films, but there are good films. There are good films. Think of Batman Begins when Nolan made that. Like, Nolan's not an action director. And like how piss poorly that whole like fight sequence down at the docks is cut together. And like, there's just frantic. I love it when a film is able to do this. Leave that camera. Let that camera go. Let that shot linger. Let that shot extent. And that's how you completely sell this action, because you can tell that, number one, that it's Keanu Reeves. Like, I mean, that's, I mean, I'm granted he probably didn't do every single stunt in the film, but you can tell there were a lot he did do, because you can see him the whole fucking time. And that's, it's amazing. It's amazing that you can do that, that you can put a character in this kind of peril. And I think that's how you make the action scenes more intense. You don't cut around them. You don't try to make this frantic, jostled the handheld camera with 1,000 cuts. You leave a steady shot and just watch. All you do is just watch as this just badass action sequence just happens around you. That was so great. I keep going back to that hallway scene in the house with the knife. Yes. Yep. And like flipping each other over, like hitting each other, doing all this, doing all that. And then finally, of course, the knife is like fake as shit, you can tell, but like regardless, like eventually, bam. Like, you know, he gets that kill, and I loved it. I absolutely positive. What are some of your other favorite things about this movie? I feel like I've been talking about it a lot.
Well, no, yeah, it's great that you are, because this is new to you and you're full of excitement about it all. And I'm kind of just vicariously reliving it through you.
Please to me, please.
I've got no problem at all with that. I think we've said most of the best things. It's just the inevitability about the way he gets to Viggo and what's going to happen to Viggo and all of his cronies. And then the nice little moment, the redemptive kind of, hey, John Wick, as much as he is this remorseless killing machine, he has a human side too, which is the side that fell in love with his wife and is grieving her loss. And he really attached himself to that dog, which we didn't even mention. Which, by the way, the most manipulative thing in the history of the universe. Kill a dog to set off a character. But it works. Especially when they show the blood trail of the dog crawling to die by his side.
Oh, my God.
That worked.
Why you got to bring it back, Paul? Why you got to bring it back?
But then he ends up with the pit bull at the end. Like, he's made room in his life for another dog. And that's kind of, in a way, the signifier that maybe if we didn't have a sequel, John Wick's going to move on to a happy post-Russian mob boss assassin life.
Well, and we're supposed to get a third one too, right?
It's shooting right now, I believe, for early 2019 release. So if they're not shooting right now, they're in prep for it.
Yeah. And I mean, I have seen, of course, the I saw one of his training videos that he did for John Wick 2, where basically it was just Keanu Reeves training on a gun range to show like how how good he is with a firearm. Yeah. And
all the, and look, I don't know how much this is drummed up, you know, behind the scenes stuff, because everybody sucks each other's dicks on these behind the scenes featurettes.
Of course, but, yeah.
But the way that they sort of talk about him with just reverence for his professionalism, that he would be the guy who would come in early. He was the one who would say, everyone's having a day off. Is there anyone who wants to come and train with me tomorrow? These kinds of things. I don't know. Just you hear the stories consistently and you see the evidence on screen. And for me, that's the deciding factor here. He must be such a professional, and it's just hats off to Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, I can't agree with you enough there. It shows in every single frame of the film that, I mean, he literally worked his ass off for this thing. And yeah, you know what? You can deride him, you know, in when he's tougher. He has to try to show range in some of the different films. I mean, granted, he's not like the most, he's not Daniel Day-Lewis or anything. Like, he's not going to give you like an incredibly like dramatic performance that shows like a range of everything. But if he can work it enough to sell the human aspects of the film, and if he, you know, puts in the work to make the action scenes believable, I got to go back. And I know 1,000,000,000 people have said this because they've all seen this film way before I have, but the way that they shoot the action scenes in this film is just, it's jaw dropping, because you don't see this kind of thing in action cinema these days. You don't see this kind of thing in films, even of this genre, because, we'll clean it up in editing. We'll make that punch look like it hits harder in editing. Like, no, a lot of this stuff is done in camera, like right there. Like, you know, he's, you know, like I said, hip tossing guys, and he's punching guys, and he's shooting guys, and he's moving. He's got this such a fluidity to him. You mentioned that earlier, where it was very much like the gun was an extension of himself. It's 100% true, because you never for a moment, and this is, I think, the greatest power that any actor can have, but they transform. You don't see Keanu Reeves in that role. I mean, of course you do, because it's Keanu, but you see John Wick, you legitimately see this badass assassin that is nigh unkillable, you know, nigh unstoppable. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And like I said, you believe it. It's not a question of, oh, Keanu Reeves is so miscast. No. By the end of the first 40 minutes of this movie, you're like, Keanu Reeves is fucking nailing this role. He is John Wick. This is his best role, I would say, since The Matrix. Where
you mean that movie Caleb hates?
Whatever, Caleb. Whatever. I'm still not over that. I'm not sure I ever will be.
No, I don't think you. I don't think you ever will be.
That film was perfect because he was kind of the slack jawed, like, oh, what's going on here? This film is perfect because he is stoically determined, and like you said, doesn't require a lot of range, but. You made the comparison, Daniel Day-Lewis, yep, he's never going to be that guy. Daniel Day-Lewis is never going to be a guy who can hold a gun and punch someone as convincingly as Keanu.
Well, maybe Daniel Day-Lewis could, because, God, he's so method. But Daniel Day-Lewis would straight, like, training for this film, Daniel Day-Lewis would, like, straight, like, go become an assassin and, like, murder a bunch of people. And then, like, he'd transfer that over to the screen. And then he'd be in character the whole time on set. So, like, you'd always be wondering if he was going to murder you. Maybe anybody else. He'd throw anybody else really into that picture. But, I mean, I don't really know what else we can say about the film other than you mentioned the music.
Fuck. Oh, and the music's great. Tyler Bates did the score and, you know, the bits and pieces of music cues they throw in there. But, yeah, that whole... nightclub scene, sorry, is incredible. Just that pounding score. In fact, it was so incredible. For a while back there, we were creating weekly promos. I just used that bit of music as the backing track to what our promos were.
Oh, I never even caught that. Of course, that was a while ago. That was, a year ago?
Yeah, start of the year, I think.
Yeah, that was a while ago when we were doing that. But, I mean, it's... I'm really excited for the sequel, and I mean, like I said, I've heard mixed things about the sequel, or at least I remember people being more mixed on it than they were on this film. Like, it's not quite as good, which would disappoint me a little bit.
Yeah, but look, honestly, at this stage, unless something goes really wrong, it's still going to be in my top 10 films of the year. So
I think that's probably more of a testament to this year as a whole in film.
Possibly. Than it is possibly.
Oh, this year. Why? Why this year?
Why 2017? What have you done what you've done?
I bet it won't be on Wayne's list because he's got to make room for Thor Ragnarok and shit.
Oh, God. Yes.
What did he give that movie? A fucking 89? God damn it. I wanted to hit him. Of course, then again, he did give Civil War a 10 out of 10. So,
God. Don't get me started, please.
As if everybody doesn't already know, because they do. But in case, for whatever reason, they live under a rock and they don't listen to your show, which is incredible. I mean, as long as you can stand some of Wayne's dicier picks, because it's become an epidemic now where I think you need to get him some professional help. And I know you can offer professional help. So I don't know if you sat with him after recordings and been like, should we talk about maybe buy him that, you know, vibrating ass thing that he saw at the adult store. Whatever.
Twerking ass, yes. No, look, as you said, I'm sure your listeners know, but we are the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews. Please just search for us on Google. That's the easiest way to do it. We are the first 15 things that pop up, give or take. We're on pretty much every platform, including Podbean now, which I don't understand how that happened because I didn't submit us to there, but they've picked us up there as well.
I got Emily's at DC Podfest right now, and apparently she talked to one of the people that's like higher up in Podbean.
Ooh.
And they love our show.
Nice.
I was like, what? Like, what? Huh?
No.
Yeah.
That's really cool, though.
No. Cocaine's a hell of a drug. Well, of course, Paul and I and our shows are both members of the Podfix Network, which you can find at podfixnetwork.com. We've got a bunch of amazing shows over there, so please, please, please go and check us out. Catch all of our antics, I guess, on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, epicfilmguys.com, podcatcher of your choice, yada, 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 yada. First, thank you for being here. Thank you for doing it, because I knew this film was a big one for you. So I went into this one, and I know, you know, sometimes you and I will have these films that we just do not agree on whatsoever. And sometimes you and I will be right in lockstep where we'll perfectly agree about it. So when I heard and I knew how much you loved this film, I went into it with kind of this inflated, we'll say, sense of anticipation. And I'm really glad that paid off.
Me too.
So happy that I got a chance to see it. Can we just take a moment to reflect on how fucking amazing this film is?
Get into it. If you haven't seen it and you're listening to this, I don't know why it would be this far into the episode, but if you haven't, then you owe it to yourself, if you're an action fan, to check out John Wick. Nick, thank you so much for the invite back. It's always a pleasure to be on your show. It's always a pleasure to talk films with you, even when your ass is so wrong, you couldn't be more wrong than the most wrongest man on the wrongest wrong day of his life. We have a lot of fun. And
he's talking always about Batman versus Superman. Spoiler alert. You know, and that's, to go one step further, Paul and I are usually pretty harsh in terms of critical ratings of things. Mm. We're hard to please in a lot of ways. I mean, we're the guys that rated Thor Ragnarok 7 and 6 respectively. So the fact that we both love this film, I would say, like, if I were to rate it on like your rating scale, I'd probably put it like an 87, 88. Like, it'd be high, like perfect. Super high. Like on mine, like a 9 out of 10. Yeah. Yep. It's that fucking good. It's beyond anything that I expected. And that's probably playing a role into that, because it just blew me away. And see this movie. And I want to thank you, Paul, so much for joining us. I want to thank everybody who's out there for tuning in to this spotlight. We're going to have more spotlight opportunities up for vote over in the Hopester Dumpster. So if you haven't yet, please go ahead and jump over onto our Facebook group, the Hopester's Dumpster. Just search for it. You'll see a picture of Justin and a dumpster and a bottle of Mr. Boston, I think, is I don't know. It's the Hopester. Even though the Hopester has been missing for a while. I don't know.
M-I-A.
Yeah, thank Christ. But thank you all very, very much for listening. I have been Nick.
I have been Paul.
And we will see you at the movies.
Check out more shows like it at PodFixNetwork.com.